Ron Wotus, the assistant to the director of player development for the San Francisco Giants. He's a man about town. Well, how are you?
Thanks for that great introduction, Marty. I'm doing extremely well. And how's the rabbi today?
Very, very well. You know, I'm looking forward to this game tonight. I will tell you that. On the Sunday night, it's a classic. And, you know, it's funny. I kind of set it up, and we talked about this a little bit. Seven games between the Giants and the Cardinals over two weekends. It's 3-3. It's like the seventh game of a World Series. And what do you get? Carlos Rodon and Adam Wainwright. How about that, Will?
Great matchup. And as everybody's aware, we always like locking horns with the Cardinals because they used to be the class of the National League. And, you know, you knew you were going to have to beat them or Atlanta if you wanted to get to the World Series. And Cardinals got a good club this year. They're playing the Giants well. Should be a fun game today.
Well, I can still see 2002 and that playoff with the Cardinals and David Bell and Kenny Lofton. Well, what a moment that was, huh?
Yeah, no, great moment. Look, anytime you win and you win late, it makes it even more exciting for the fans and everybody involved. That was certainly an exciting game and a great series. And, yeah, let's hope the Giants can win today and get the series for the season against the Cardinals as well.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Wainwright. And I said in the open today, this is the 300—Molina and Wainwright have been together 310 times as a pitcher and a catcher. He's 40 years old. He's coming off the COVID list. But give me your thoughts on Wainwright and just that record. There's only Warren Spahn and Del Crandall ahead of those two and Mickey Lolich and Bill Freehand. Other than that, it's Molina and Wainwright. How about that for all these years?
You know how I feel about longevity. I've mentioned it on this show many times. I mean, it's a test of a great player to do it as long as they have and to accomplish what they have. Talking about going through the Cardinals, you know, the guy behind the plate, Molina, you know, he runs the whole game. Whatever the pitching plan is, his instincts, his ability to stop the running game, and what he does behind the plate is such a big plus for the St. Louis Cardinals. And then when you have a guy in the mound like Wainwright, I mean, he's got the true breaking ball. And a breaking ball that you don't see from a lot of pitchers in the game, and he knows how to spot his fastball. And these two are just so smart. You know, they know how to navigate a lineup. They're not going to throw a ball right down the middle in a big moment. You're going to have to hit a well-located breaking ball or well-located fastball to beat him. Wainwright's been a great pitcher. And, you know, what he's brought to the club, I believe he's the one that started. You know, the Cardinals were the first team that I saw when a pitcher went down to the bullpen between starts to do his side work. The whole starting staff would go down and watch in support of what the guy was doing. And that brings a lot of communication. It brings a lot of commitment to each other. And they were the first club that I've seen doing that. And I think Wainwright was behind that.
Do other teams do that? Do the Giants ever do that?
Well, on occasion, you see players go down and watch their teammate throw his side, et cetera, et cetera. But years ago, I mean, this started, I remember about 10 years ago, I'd see a bullpen full of starting pitchers and one starting pitcher throwing his side. So not like the Cardinals did it. It seemed to be something that was part of their routine and certainly paid off for them.
Well, with Wainwright, I always say you have to wait him out, you know, because he will give you a pitch to hit. You know, the strikeouts are there, but he will give you something to hit. It's just you want to be on balance when it comes.
That's a great point, Marty. You're exactly right. I mean, he's going to try to finesse you. He's going to stay out of the middle. So to your point, if you wait him out and you don't chase that breaking ball or that fastball, he's got to come over the plate at some point. That's when you get him. You're exactly right. And that's the way we beat him over the years.
Yeah, interesting. One other point about these two, and of course, we'll talk about Pujols in a second. Maybe the last time we'll see these three, and I think they all could be Hall of Famers. But yesterday was interesting. Carlos Marmol, who's the youngest manager in baseball, well, I think he's, you know, 28 years old, 22. I don't know. Maybe he's 17. Who knows what? But he's in his 30s, and he's the manager of the Cardinals. And he goes out to the mound. And he essentially talks to Molina, and Molina takes over the whole conversation with the pitcher. How about that?
Well, Yachty's been doing that for a long time, you know, and I think any good manager or any manager, especially in his position with the lack of experience he has, and he has Yachty Molina behind the plate, seeing the movement, seeing the stuff, the location, you're going to want to lean on him. And I know Boch leaned on Buster a lot and a lot of other great catchers over the years. So, you know, I think it's at another level with Yachty Molina and with the young manager in St. Louis. And, you know, why wouldn't you? I mean, he's been there a lot more than the manager has, and I'm sure he helps them make the tough decisions.
Yeah, he got his big hit yesterday, went past Piazza. He's now the sixth most hits for a catcher in Major League history. So that's Yadier Molina, the Hall of Famer for sure. Well, we may see the end of Pujols, at least unless these teams meet later on, and he's still part of it. But what a matchup that is. I mean, Rodon, look, he's going to throw 98. Do you just challenge Pujols, who probably can still hit a fastball, or do you go slider against him? This is an interesting matchup. I assume Pujols is in today with the righty-lefty thing.
Yeah, I expect that he would be in there as well. You know, I haven't seen that much of Pujols to really know how he's handling the, you know, the 95-plus fastball. But to your point, I've seen him against enough lefties to know he can still hit a left-hander. I think he's going to pitch him just as he has anybody else. I mean, I think you got to get the ball in. You know, typically when a guy's older, his bat starts to slow down a little bit. If you're throwing 98, you can break some bats inside. But I think he'll mix it up. I think he's not going to try to throw one right down the middle. He still has the utmost respect for Pujols. And that's the thing. I mean, when you're facing a guy that when he hits the ball good, hits a single or double, you're not as cautious with him as if a guy can leave the yard. And we know Pujols can do that. So I bet you he finishes with some sort of breaking ball.
All right. Good analysis from the professor here. Hey, I got a nice note from Colleen Edwards out at the River Islands. And, you know, our good friend Don Johns, who runs the baseball program out there and was instrumental in the construction of Islanders Field, whoa, which is beautiful. They've got some games coming up, and you could get a ticket, $5 or $7, 500 seats. There's food and beverage and all this stuff. But Don Johns has put together a list of games, whoa, that I just want to touch on a couple of them. May 16th to 20th, which, of course, is this coming week, the California CIF Federation, the San Joaquin Section Playoffs, which will be fun. Then he's got the NorCal World Series, the Freshman Showcase, June 4th and 5th. June 10th and 12th, the Bay Area World Series, founded in 2004 as one of its premier showcase events for college-bound players. And then the one that I like, really, the area code tryouts, June 13th through 15th, hosted by the A's and Major League Baseball. And they bring in 60 players, evaluation and team selection prior to the MLB draft. How about that? All that at River Islands, Will. How about that?
Well, you mentioned it about Don Johns. If anything knows anybody knows anything about amateur baseball, it's him. I think he's been to the Amateur World Series with the Danville Hoots more times than the San Francisco Giants. So he knows what he's doing. As you said, instrumental in putting that all together out there and bringing in some great showcases for the players, but also for the parents and people in the area. So June's a big month out there in River Islands. Like you said, I'm looking forward to hearing about the area code tryouts as well, June 13th through 15th. Because that's where you see a lot of good amateur players that have a chance to play pro ball or move on to a top college.
Nice. Yeah, it's good. I'm glad Don Johns is doing that out at River Islands. Well, this game's in St. Louis. It's supposed to be 100 degrees. I was looking on today's weather app. You've been there in some hot weather. Boy, 100 degrees in St. Louis, not pleasant.
Well, we've been there when it was AstroTurf, right? They're lucky they have the grass, because if it was 100 and they had AstroTurf, they'd be having the wedge salad inside their hat today.
the to lettuce,
keep them cool, right? We used to soak the cabbage or the lettuce and put it inside the hat so it would keep you cool throughout the day. I think they're using other things, but that was a mainstay for us back in the day.
Well, you know, it's funny. What a week of baseball. The Giants took care of Colorado. They've beaten them 10 straight. Now they go into Colorado, and they've got to fly in after this night game. And you've been down this road a million times. You get in late. But Colorado, I remember the first time I ever saw Coors Field, I said, the infield looked twice as big. The dirt part looked twice as big as anything I'd ever seen. And that was the first thing I saw about Colorado. You better be in shape to play infield. You better have an arm to play there. And let's see how the Giants handle it, because it's not Pac Bell Park. It's not Oracle Park. It's a different place.
It is, and it's tough to play there as well. The air is so light. The ball comes off the bat. You know, you can almost feel it, how quickly it comes off the bat. And a lot of times they have that thick grass on the infield, and it slows it up, and then it hits the dirt, and it picks up speed. But to your point, that infield is cut, you know, from the baseline or the cut of the infield grass towards home to the back. It's about three steps deeper than any other ballpark that I've played in. And years ago, the Rockies used to delay steal a lot, because if you come in there and you don't play the proper depth, if you just go back to the back of the grass and play, you're playing awfully deep. And second base is a long way. So it was a good place to delay steal with two outs, because the infielders were so deep, it was harder to get to base. But it is different. It's different defensively. The altitude affects you. But I know one thing. The hitters are licking their chops. Going into Colorado, they can't wait. They want to get fat in that light air and put some numbers up while they're there.
No, the Giants have handled Colorado 10 straight. So what about the flight? Of course, this is an ESPN game. You've been down this road. You know, that nighttime flight, getting in the middle of the night, then you got to play that next day. How's that? How do you handle something like that?
Well, you don't. You just deal with it, right? I mean, it's kind of what we do. And you hate to have a night game and then travel and have a day game, because it is a quick turnaround, but it's something you put up with. You do the best you can with it. You know, I think hopefully they'll gain an hour. I'm not sure if it's the same time zone or not. A little tougher, you know, when you're going east and losing time and having to deal with something like that. Yeah, there's no easy way. You know, you just try to get as much rest as you can and be ready to play. It's all part of it.
Interesting week coming up. Of course, Giants and Rockies for three, and of course tonight it's Rodon and Wainwright. Good discussion about what's going on in baseball. All right, you told me this week, and we chatted a little bit, that you were down in San Jose and you're seeing pitchers who are really throwing hard, and that seems to be the story of Major League Baseball today. Of course, we saw Junis yesterday, who's a little different, and did his good job yesterday. But, well, last night I just saw the headline, the Toronto Blue Jays A-team, this is the A team, I guess, in the Florida State League. Their pitchers struck out 24 of the opposition last night. I've never seen that in my life in baseball.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, the velocities are up, as you mentioned. San Jose, I think, you know, everybody in that starting staff is throwing in the mid-90s. I mean, electric arms. They think people come in from the bullpen. Everybody's 90 or above with good stuff. And, you know, the hitters are all or nothing today. I mean, they're training, you know, with the launch angle and all that type of stuff. They're training to hit the ball and drive the ball. There's not much discussion about putting the ball in play, getting a guy in from third, moving a runner. Those have gone by the wayside. So I understand why you're seeing a lot more strikeouts, but 24, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, 24, Toronto's A-team last night. Wow. A couple of things that came up. One was a no-hitter. We had a no-hitter this week. Reed Detmers of the Angels, and Joe Maddon left him in there. He said it was a life moment for the kid, and he pitched a no-hitter against Tampa Bay. And the interesting part, well, only two strikeouts. And he's a rookie. The last rookie Angel to do this was Bo Bilinski back in 1962. Oh. Is another story. Really a wild character in the early days of the Angels. But how about that? A two-strike no-hitter, 25 balls in play. How about that?
Well, you know better than I do. I'm sure there's not a lot of no-hitters with only two strikeouts. I don't know if you said that's some sort of record or not, but it immediately makes me think of a guy like Greg Maddux. You know, very difficult pitcher to hit. I think he beat us once, nine innings, shut out in 2 hours. You know, games are 4 hours today, but you know, he pitched to contact. He just kept the ball out of the middle of the plate. He'd sink the ball away, pull the string, a lot of weak contact. So when you're that good, like Maddox, you get weak contact, You're not the ball's not finding the outfield grass, and it's not finding a hole. So I didn't see the game. I understand. I agree with Joe. It was a life moment for this kid. I don't know of him. I don't know if he's an up and coming guy that people think he can be an all-star or not. But you see it. You see guys in the zone. You know, everything working for him. And then sometimes the hitters just are having an off day. And I know when you're in a game like that and you're in the seventh or eighth inning and nobody has a hit, the pressure mounts a little bit for the team that's getting no hit. You know, you start pressing. You want to get that so bad. But what a great story that was and a great performance by that young man.
Yeah, it's amazing when you think about it. 25 balls were put in play. All right, so now you're the shortstop. I'll ask you this. Have you been the shortstop behind no hitters? And how did you feel late in the game if you were?
Well, you're right. No, I played second behind a no-hitter in AAA. We were up in Tacoma, and the pitcher's last name was Fowler, right-handed pitcher. Threw low 90s, had a good breaking ball. But, no, you get a little nervous. I mean, you start to say, well, I don't want to be the one to screw this thing up, you know. you want to die for everything. And your level of focus and concentration goes through the roof because it's a no-hitter. And you want to make every play you can. You're worried about your positioning. Am I in the right spot? Am I not? So it's a little nerve-wracking, but it's a lot of fun as well. And you really can feel the moment for the pitcher when you're playing behind him.
I like it. It's the first complete game the kid has ever thrown going back to Little League, I think. So it was a good baseball moment. Well, the Cardinals, we get rid of them, and Seattle Mariners are now on the horizon. Not that the Giants are going to play Seattle, but it seems like they make a trade with Seattle every other day. And I was thinking about it. You bring in a guy who's here for 2 days, 3 days, then he's gone. I imagine coaches, well, how do you deal with the new players all the time? And do you get nervous that, hey, they're going to find out everything we do, then they're going somewhere else? How do you deal with that?
Well, you do think about that. For instance, we had, you know, six or seven guys on the disabled list, and we bring in a guy that's coming up from AAA, and he comes to the major leagues, and, you know, you got a Brandon Belt coming back and or Longoria, and a guy plays that position. You don't expect he's going to possibly be there that long. So, you know, sometimes as a third base coach, you'll give a guy his own signs just to be sure that you don't want to give him the team signs. So, you know, if he does let go or doesn't stay with you, go somewhere else, he doesn't know all your signs. So I've done that before many times over the years, had a player, and I just wasn't sure if he was going to stick with us. So instead of giving him the signs that everybody else had, I'd give him his own signs and tell him, hey, everybody has their own signs here. And then there you go. 3-4 days later, the guy's gone. He's in another organization. And when you go play them, you don't have to worry about him knowing your signs and have to change your signs up. So you do think about those things as coaches, no doubt about it.
Boy, it's funny. Hey, another I love the anomalies of baseball. Third-string catchers, you know, they very rarely come into play. But all of a sudden, Pittsburgh had a situation where they had to go to a third-string catcher, and he missed the ball, and blah, blah, blah. Things happened. And I started to think about it. How do you even prepare a third-string catcher to get ready to go into a major league game? And God forbid you need him.
Well, if you're carrying a true third-string catcher, that's what he does. But I think probably in this instance and what you're talking about is more the emergency third-string catcher.
Right, right.
The guy that doesn't catch. And then all of a sudden, you know, you pinch it or pinch run for your catcher. And then late in the game, you only had two catchers on the club, the catcher, and he gets hurt, and now you're screwed. And it happened to us in the Giants, I think, one time. I don't know if your fans remember that Pedro Feliz had to go back behind home plate. And it was very comical. He got through it, and we were winning the game, and he got through it okay. But I remember him giving the signs. You know, you squat down, you put the fingers down. He's in a squat, and he was giving the signs so low that everybody could see the signs behind him, like from the dugout, fastball, one, two. So it was pretty comical, and you just hold your breath. You hope nobody gets hurt, and you hope it's not a close game when this happens, and that's the fear of pinch hitting or making a move for your catcher early in the game when you don't have a true third catcher and you got to have somebody that's emergency. It's the manager's biggest fear, and it's been my biggest fear as a bench coach many, many times. Because Boach, he would go for it. He didn't care about that. You know, it'd be the fifth inning, we had a chance to score, and he wanted to make a move with the catcher. He would do it. And you know what? In 12 years, we've only been burned one time, and that was a time Pedro Feliz had to go behind the plate.
Well, I guess when you had Pablo there, he did catch at some point.
Yes, and that's the beauty of having a guy like Pablo on your roster, even though he's not working as a catcher. You know he can go back there because he's caught before. You know, every manager would love to have a true third catcher, somebody that he can put back there. And that's what happened in September all the time. Which one of the main guys that you call up in September? You call up the third catcher, not just for bullpens and all the work has to be done with the extra pitchers, but so you can have the, you know, eliminate that fear of I only have two catchers, and now you can make the move with a catcher and not run out of catchers, especially when you have lead. You know, that's as I said, that's a nightmare when that happens.
Oh, boy. Hey, it made me think of Auerbach, the kid from spring training who could catch and play the infield. I think he's in Richmond now. Made him very valuable, didn't it, Woe? I think you commented on that.
No question about it. I think that, he's extremely valuable. And, everybody's always looking for a guy that can do that. And, you know, the other side of it is when you have a guy, sometimes you have a guy that's a real good second baseman, and you say, well, he might be able to catch a little bit. Then you're scared to put him back there because he hasn't done it. And then the fear of injury. So it's nice to have a player that's been doing this his whole career. He catches and he plays other positions, opposed to having a guy that you want to make a third-string catcher. But Auerbach, he comes to mind right away as one of those guys. And as you mentioned, Pablo Sandoval as well.
Boy, as we wrap it up here, and it's a pleasure to talk to you on this Sunday. Mauricio Dubon traded to Houston, and I bring it up, a fan favorite. Everybody liked this kid. And sorry to see him go. I realize it's baseball, but everybody liked him.
I think the fans did, too. I know he's had his moments on the bases and upset some people, but, you know, he plays with flair. We've had him for a good while now. He's got a great smile, plays with energy, loves to play the game. And I think that comes across, that youthful enthusiasm that he has when he plays the game. And we wish him the best. You know, he did a good job for us in the years that he was here. And I'm excited for him to see what he can do over there in Houston. And maybe he can find himself over there and get more playing time. Because, you know, our club is pretty much set. With the guys we have and the guys coming back. So it was a good opportunity for him, Scott and Farhan, to give him a chance to go ahead and play somewhere else for another organization.
Yeah, I picked a good one, too. And plus Dusty, you know, another homeboy from Sacramento like Dubon. Well, good news. All right. Well, great having you on, and I wish you a happy Sunday. This is going to be fun to watch this game tonight, and then we'll talk next Sunday. The Padres are in town, so we got good baseball coming up.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the game today. Let's enjoy it, and we'll talk to you next week, Marty.
All right, well, take care. All right, that is our third base coach, formerly of the Giants, of course. He's a director, assistant to the director of player personnel, and, of course, he is the professor. All right, more coming up. Bill has Andrea Nakano coming up next, right here on the Sports Leader.